Hello and welcome to the Colchester Arts Centre's Never Knowingly Understood podcast, brought to you by Nina Doyle and myself, Tim Morgan. And well, this is going to be a special one because this is Fraser Morgan. Now, Fraser Morgan will be performing his 1,000th, yes, 1,000th gig at Colchester Arts Centre on Saturday the 8th of June. He's only in his mid-20s, which is, I mean, it's phenomenal. And if you're not aware of him, I mean, I suppose he's kind of described as a kind of an acoustic folk punk. So kind of think of a little bit of Billy Bragg, a bit of Frank Turner, maybe the Levellers. Anyway, let's kind of catch up now with Fraser and see what he's got to say.
1,000 gigs.
Yeah.
On June the 8th. So,
yeah.
Do you diarize them? How do you know?
So, when I was about 17, 18-ish, my friend had said to me, like, oh, you should count them. And by this point, I hadn't done too many. So, I remembered the ones that I had done.
Mm-hmm.
So, I just literally, it's very rock and roll. I put them in an Excel spreadsheet.
Yes.
And then as I type in the numbers, it adds it all up for me. And I've got the solo spreadsheet and the band spreadsheet. So,
okay. So this will be 1,000 total gigs. That'll be band and solo combined.
Correct. Yeah. 1,000 gigs of being me.
Okay. So when did you actually start? When was your first gig? Where was your first gig?
Well, I started by accident because I didn't mean to get into music. I wanted to be a banker when I was about 15 or 16. Mm-hmm. That's bank with a B. And and then I asked for a guitar for birthday and I played. And when I was about 15, 16-ish, my last year of secondary school in Braintree, mm-hmm. There were a pub that I'd known for years had started an open mic called The Swan. So I went down there and I played that open mic and I was bricking it. I was probably awful because I've got all the videos, a lot of my performances, and I probably was very bad. Mm-hmm. But all the kids who bullied me at school were there as well, so they made it even worse. But afterwards, they were nothing but kind to me. And that's probably the only time that the bullies at school have actually been nice to me.
And why do you think that was? Because did they see a different side to you? Did they see something maybe they weren't aware of before? Or
Potentially, you know, but I mean, if you, because I'm quite into my psychology, maybe if you look at it in a psychological point of view, they're not in the usual setting of being at school and trying to win points, you know. Mm-hmm. At this point, they are now kids around adults, and maybe that was to do a little bit of it, but I don't feel like they would have really cared. And I think it's just because they went, oh, he does music, that's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's really weird. It was, but you know, since then, I think that probably could have been like the worst ever first gig you could ever have in your life if you really think about it. So, ever since then, every gig has been a breeze, more or less.
So you got a guitar and you did your first gig in the Swan, well, just outside Braintree, isn't it? But
and no, there's another one in town centre called the Swan.
Oh, okay. So it's okay. So
yeah.
What was the musical path then? How did you get into that? I mean, what was your kind of influence? What made you pick up a guitar?
Well, I used to be ashamed of it. I'm not anymore. Completely on it because they're actually quite fantastic. Ed Sheeran. So mm-hmm. When I was about 14, 15 years old or so, I was listening to a lot of Ed Sheeran, and I'd always listen to what Mama put on. Like James Blunt's album was great. Babylon, White Ladder by David Gray, phenomenal album, one of the best albums of all time. Dolly Parton, Genesis. I listened to all this stuff from my mum. But from the age of 8 or 9, I also listened to quite a bit of hip hop. So I was really into like my Eminem and stuff. And then as I got older, I've always rhymed. I've loved rhyming. I'm very bad at the subject, which is English, but I've always really found an admiration and love for tying words together and telling a story and making it flow and sound nice and fun. And then once I heard this Ed Sheeran fella do it, I was like, that feels accessible. That feels like I can do it. I can't do all the crazy stuff that Phil Collins does, and so on and so forth. I don't know how to make these beats like Eminem, but this guitar and these vocals—that's that sounds achievable for me. So that, and that's how I landed myself in it. And through my early kind of 15 to 18, 19 or whatever, there was, I needed someone to look up to, and I really admired Ed Sheeran's work ethic and the way he was nice to people, just the way he held himself. I watched almost every interview I could, and I came away from that thinking, that's who I want to be. Like, he's kind, he's considerate, he knows how to put on a show, he doesn't take himself too seriously, and he tells a phenomenal story. And that was exactly what I wanted. And his influences are Nis Loppy, and I get a lot of people say that I sound like them, which is a huge compliment for me because I absolutely adore them. And I've supported Luke Concannon of Nis Loppy on their tour as well. And I was talking to him the other day whilst I was in Worcester. I was WhatsApping him whilst he was in Boston in America. And so these figures are quite important for me because they're both really lovely people. And growing up, I think I lacked lovely people in my life. And so that was really important for me to have this, and to have this, I don't know, this thing that I wanted to do, this music, this performing. I was like, this is fun. I could really do this, you know?
So before the actual kind of getting out there and playing and obviously picking up a guitar and learning the guitar, did the words come before that? Were you writing things before?
I was writing a lot before. As I said, like, I remember, like, explicitly, and I hear a lot of people talking in their interviews, but like, oh, I've been a dancer since I was four, or I've been writing songs since I was four. And I'm always like, ah, go away. Like, you always say that. But in this case, it's actually true. I remember being about 4 or 5 years old, rhyming and just really enjoying it. And then the performance side of things was an accident because when I was about, I think I was about 9 or 10, I gave mum a heart attack because I came back from school. She got a letter. She was like, Fraser, what's this saying? You're performing in a school show. And I was like, I don't know. She's like, why did you sign up for that? And I was like, I don't know. And I did it, and I performed, and I found this love for performing as well, and just having a laugh, and so the Ed Sheeran kind of combined those two worlds together for me, to be honest with you.
And do you find it quite natural and easy? I mean, do you get pre-gig nerves or?
I used to get quite a big amount of pre-gig nerves, and nowadays I don't so much because, like, I think a big part of becoming the person I am today is I've had to really learn to trust myself, and be kind to myself and navigate this path. And so with that, I've really had to trust the fact that, okay, you've done this before, you know how to do it. It's just go and give the best show of your life, whether it's to five people or 500. Go and give the best show of your life. Do it because you love it, and whatever happens from there is a bonus, you know. And but there's different types of dynamics that I've really had to practice within performing music. So, you know, sometimes I still do pub gigs where I go and play 2 45-minute sets of like mixture of covers and originals, and people don't know who I am. And so it is my job there to make sure that they have a good night, but also plug myself enough to the point where if I go back to this, I did like this random village called Knowle near Solihull the other day below Birmingham. No one knew who I was, right? I was just this southern kid. And but they were gassed, they were so great. And my job there that night was I am the background music and I'm okay with that, but I'm going to play it in a way that it'll really add a bit of life to the night so that I can't go unnoticed. Or then I go and play these festivals, and no, again, a lot of people, a lot of places where I go, Tim, spoiler, no one knows who I am. So I've got to work very hard. And when I go to festivals, it's like, you know, people are going to be, there's not, I don't know how to explain. There's just so many different types of dynamics of gigs that I've really had to learn to practice. And something that I'm still learning to this day and still practicing, because it always is, you always have to keep on top of it. Otherwise it will just smother you. And is I'm playing music because I really enjoy it. And what else would I be doing with my Saturday night? I'd probably be sat at home in my underwear playing games, which, to be fair, is quite nice to do sometimes. But I get a lot more out of going around and chatting to people. And so practicing this dynamic and almost this mindfulness of when you go to a gig, don't expect anyone to listen. And that's just my general thing because I try, even though I'm an artist and I stand on a stage and people look at me, it's quite contradictory for me to say. However, I really try my best to not have an ego on me, because at the end of the day, I'm there for other people's consumption. Like, I'm there to make them happy if I can. My goal when I go and perform is I want them to leave the room a little bit happier than how they entered it. That in my head, that's my job. And so it's very rare that I'll come on stage and go, like, oh, I'm the best, I'm great, cool, look at me. 99% of the time, it will be, oh, I made those people laugh there, or those people smiled at that, or during that song, I'm pretty sure that guy was like wiping tears from his eyes. That must have really touched him. Or I saw those two people hugging. That's really fantastic. And like, it's those human interactions that fill my heart. Like, I went and played, I've played to, like, this sounds really egotistical of me, I don't mean it, help, but I've played to like hundreds of people before and they've been fun shows. But then I recently went and played in Eastbourne to about 10 people, and it's one of the best gigs of my life, purely because of the human connection and interaction I had with everyone. I was chatting to everyone in the crowd, because I talk a lot now when I play, because I think people like it. Some people are like, oh, can you cut the talking bit? I'm like, you can just go to another gig, because I quite like it. Like, I don't walk into a chicken shop and be like, could you sell pork instead? Like, it's grand. There's a chicken shop around the corner if you want to go. So, but I chat to people when I play, and I pick on people in crowds. Not pick on, but I'm like, what's your name? Where are you from? What's your story? Oh, you look quite cool. What have you been up to today? And a lot of the times now, by the end of this gig, I'm no longer the entertainment team. They are, and they're chatting amongst themselves, and they're laughing and joking. And that's something that I've really had to hone my craft doing. And so I sometimes do still get nervous, but I've really found a way just to throw myself in it and be like, let's just go and have fun with this. Don't take it too seriously. Just have a laugh.
and creating that kind of that intimacy then, how do you translate that? Because you say you played to bigger audience and hundreds of people. How do you kind of translate that? Because obviously it's not quite so easy to engage with a larger crowd.
That is a very good point. Yeah, it's more difficult. But I've never really thought about it until right this second. But if I had to give an answer, I think humans are really, really smart. Although some of them seem really, really silly, we pick up, we know, we have this intuition to things. And I think the way that I try and create this intimacy, even when these bigger shows, is by disclosing intimate parts of myself and my life, because then again, it then gives other people the permission. So when I'm on stage, I'll be like, oh, this morning I had a panic attack. That was pretty bad, but I go to therapy and I'm doing all right, to be fair. Or this weekend was a really, but like, it's in therapy, they call it appropriate disclosure, when a therapist will be honest about their problems so that the patient feels that they can connect with that person. And people pick up on that when you're playing, they pick up on genuinity. Like, I can't remember who was saying it, but someone said recently, like, when you're writing songs, you're going to say something that everyone else has said a million times, right? It's more or less unavoidable, but it's not about what you're saying. It's whether they believe you. And that's what I found when I play, is I'm not going to be the best. I'm not a musician. I don't consider myself a musician. I'm not going to be the best in that room, and that's okay. But like, I'll be honest, and all my songs are very honest. I'm very self-aware. Like, I take the mickey out of myself. And I think doing that allows those who are watching me, allows them to then engage with those parts of themselves, and they sit and listen and go. And I've heard through feedback from other people who have been told by other people that, like, they say that I stand out for those sorts of reasons, which is really sweet, because all I'm being is just my silly, crazy, sometimes overly honest self.
Well, no, I mean, and are all your songs then autobiographical? Are they all you,
more or
basically?
Less, yeah. I mean, yes, I'm very bad at lying when it comes to my songwriting. When it comes to like my newest single, This Is My City, I wrote that about Colchester, and the theme of it is true, like, but the little mini stories are true, but not from that direct moment. But, you know, 90% of the song is true, the same as Here We Go Again. That is very autobiographical, I think that's the word they used. A lot of my, yeah, they really are. I'm not very good at creating stories. And some songwriters out there are fantastic at it, and I really envy them. But I'm always I always write from my own point of view because that's all I know. And I
So
think
they're
therefore,
lived experiences then.
yeah, and therefore, like, when I'm writing about my lived experiences, I'm therefore writing about, I'm always quite honest in my songwriting. And when I'm doing this, yeah, I'm not very good at making up stories. They always have to come from a place or a feeling of truth that I can then emulate and amplify, or almost magnify even, and then write a song about that feeling. But again, 95% minimum of the lyrics probably be true, 90%. So yeah, very autobiographical. Great word for that, Tim. That's phenomenal.
Well, I'm glad you like it. So in ter do you feel, is there a sense of vulnerability in kind of exposing yourself in the way that you do? So kind of being so open about, because you've got songs, I mean, your first song on Spotify, which came out in 2020, is it Inebriation?
Oh wow, yeah,
So
crikey.
is that, again, I presume that's all kind of autobiographical.
That's very autobiographical, although I'm going to be probably taking that song off soon and redoing it with the full band. But that song, I did have a couple more songs out there, but I took them off because I was about 17, 18, and they were awful. But with Inebriation, for example, autobiographical, almost 100% true. I met this girl and we got on like a house on fire, and I didn't want the night to end. And I didn't care how it ended. I just wanted to be around her because the energy she had was fantastic. So, and it a lot of our relationship was we'd go out a lot of places. We lived in London, so we'd go out to a lot of places and check out the bars and stuff. And you know, there's a line in it, we'll casually drink ourselves into a blackout for an hour or two. I'm inebriated of you, and that's actually true. We left a gay club at about 3 a.m. My girlfriend and I at the time, we got on the bus back to Bethnal Green for about an hour, blacked out the whole journey. Got off the bus, she started throwing up. I went to help her. I was so drunk, I forgot I have a fear of vomit. I started throwing up immediately behind her. And then a policeman came around the corner with a baby wipe. Like, it's genuinely true. Like, so yeah, that's all of them were autobiographical. Yeah.
Okay. And so in terms of the music that so I think you've got about eight tunes on Spotify at the moment. There's a couple of live versions as well, isn't
Yeah,
there?
that's right. Yeah.
So what's kind of next for you in terms of, is there going to be an album, or what's your kind of ambition? Where are you going?
My ambition, okay, well, I was going to say in life, but musically, so my next ambition is, so I released a song the other day on Friday, and I was like, right, once that's done, I'm going to give myself some time to promote the thousandth and to focus all my energy and time on that. And then I've got an incredibly huge summer, which is growing exponentially, of festivals that I never thought I'd get in my entire life. So I'm focusing on them. But thankfully they're already booked, so I don't need to work out anything else or chase anyone anymore. So I can
And
focus my time. Go on.
how do you go about, I mean, do you book your own gigs, or do you have a book?
I
Okay, so
do.
it
So,
Everything
well, I
is
recently.
self-done.
Yeah, so I've recently actually signed with a booking agency, but they're not sorting out anything. I said to them, I was like, I fully booked myself from February to October. And I said to them, I was like, if you want to try and work with me, like, I'm fully booked. I was like, so let's work on something together. I've got November onwards free. Nothing's in there yet. I'll block it out for you. You can do that. But everything else, I book myself, and I adore that. And I signed with the booking agency because I feel like it was a necessary mature step in my career. And if it doesn't go the way I plan, or I don't like it, I can leave. That's fine. But I do really love booking the shows myself. But after the summer, I'm then going to be working towards an EP to come out, because that, I don't know how much I meant to tell you. I don't really care. I'll just tell you anyway. I haven't got a manager. I do this all myself. Worst case scenario, I could tell myself off. But I'm basically taking some time now just to gig, release some merch, and promote the thousand fan, all the big stuff. I've just been offered, but do you know, I don't know if I meant to tell you this, but I don't care. Today I got an email from Boomtown. Boomtown have just asked me to go and play. I never thought I'd be able to play Boomtown in my life. That's insane. So that happened whilst also having a very anxious day, which is crazy for me. So I'm doing that, and at the end of the year, the booking agency and I were putting on a tour together and releasing an EP called "I Hope You Can't Relate," and that's going to be my body of work, because I've done a bunch of singles, and I looked at my songs and I thought, you know what, I've got a great few songs here, these really self-aware songs. I've got a song called Ruminating, which is a song I write about when I come out of a panic attack. A song called Until Next Time, My Friend, which is the my troubles I have where I navigate the thought and fear of death. One Brick at a Time is about how bad things always are happening to you, but it's your job to take the responsibility and work them out yourself, not put them onto other people. And then the final song is Someone to Come Home To, which is about how you shouldn't employ someone else to love you via a relationship. You should learn to do that yourself. And then whatever you get is a bonus. So it's called I Hope You Can't Relate, because in a way, I hope you can't relate to all these sort of panics and fears. But yeah, so that's the next thing anyway.
Okay. And so the 1,000th gig then. So did this is you self-booked the art centre, did you? Is that...
It's crazy. Okay. I'm mental. I did it with my record label that I created, Sad Buds Records. It's a record label. It's a not-for-profit record label that I made because I love helping people so much. And so I use it to help people where it give them advice. If they, if for some weird reason someone thinks I can help them with something, I will. Like, I do not gatekeep information. Everything is democratized. I think everything should be fully accessible to those who want it. So I use Sad Buds Records to help out any artist that they want to put on shows so that I can help local venues, like raise money for in the bars and local venues that I'm putting the gigs on, to help platform and pay artists who perform. And I also use Sad Buds Records to then raise money for charity as well. So we've raised a few grand, multiple, I don't know how many grand now we've raised for local charities. So I'm putting, but I'm renting the art center myself with my label going, right, I hope I don't mess this up.
Okay. No, well, that's, you know, you, without taking risks, you never know, do you? So, and, exactly. And do you know how well the tickets have been going?
So the other day I sat at my friend's birthday with the band and I was like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how many people are coming. I was like, but then I'm getting some new merch. And they were like, go on, find out. So I called them up. I thought I'd only sold like 40, 50. And they have done extremely better than that, to the point where I'm turning around to people being like, oh, okay, like, I would recommend you buy online in advance. Like, usually I'll be like, sure, you can get someone a door. But now I'm just like, you can try, but I can't actually guarantee whether you'll, because you've still got a month and I'm going to be promoting it a lot. It's my main focus now. And so it just blows my mind that anyone wants to come and see me perform. It's just, it's crazy to me because I do this all myself. I'm just this council house kid from Braintree, like, doesn't know their dad, just raised by my mum, gone through a hell of a lot in my life. And now I'm 26 years old with no manager or agent sort of thing, like book, or a label sort of thing. And I did this without an agent, and I'm now renting out like one of the most iconic venues in the country to play my 1,000th show with a lineup of all of my friends, with the support of my band and friends. If you had, I'm so happy I stuck around in this life, because if you had told me this when I was 17, 18, I probably would have laughed in your face. But like, I can feel it in my chest right now. My chest feels so like big and warm and fuzzy, because I'm just like, this is mental that this is where I am right now. And I get here to sit and talk to you, and I never thought I'd get this opportunity. And it's just crazy.
Well, it's good, isn't it? I mean, and I think that that's obviously why people also connect with your music, and you've got that kind of closeness with the audience, I think, isn't it? Because people can relate to the stories that you're telling and those life experiences that, you know, other people will share or have a deep understanding of.
I do, I agree with that, actually. I think I've never really thought about that, but I think that it would be the case.
Yeah. So where, so once you've got the 1,000th gig under your belt and you've got your EP coming out and you're booked up through and, well, right through until November, and then whatever comes after that.
And then, yeah.
So if you had an opportunity to perform with an artist, opening up for an artist, is there a particular one that you would want to go with? I know you mentioned Ed Sheeran. Would that be...
I mean, that would be very, very cool. But nowadays, my music has changed quite a lot. And so there's some artists around me who I really connect with and really inspired me. So there's an artist that I talk to who I really, really... I love the songwriting, their vulnerability. It's an article Medium Build. They're fantastic. And I'd love to open for them because their audience are amazing, and so are they. They're a fantastic person. They live out in America. But like a band that I've always adored, who I went to see, I followed them around on their tour the other month in December, is the Front Bottoms. They're from America. That would blow my mind. I love them. And Louis Dunford, I don't even know Louis Dunford. He's incredible. Billy Bragg. Oh my God, that would be insane for me. Yeah, so I don't worry, I've sat there and thought and dreamed a lot.
Well, absolutely, you've got to have a list that you can make down, and you know, so you know, you've got to have those kind of, because you never know, do you?
You it never could know. Happen. I think if Nis Loppy came back, which I think they will, if they came back, I'd love to support them as their duo and not just Luke and Callan, as amazing as that was, that would be like a big one for it. But they're like. They're those three or four are like they're in my sights, but who knows? Right now, I'm trying my best to live off this what I do. I'd spend every weekend, two or three, four times a weekend, traveling around the country, playing shows to people, staying in my camper van, and connecting with humans. If I end up supporting any of these people, mental, that'd be insane.
Yeah, so. What can people expect then from this 1,000th gig? You've already said, you know, you've got friends, label, what's the kind of, is the lineup confirmed for the supporting acts?
So the lineup is going to consist of, the support will be consist of three people, three acts, two of which I manage. The opening act is Jackson Rivers, who is an artist that I manage who I absolutely adore. Very kind of Jerry Cinnamon sort of style, very vulnerable, open, honest, and sometimes comical storytelling about all the things they got up to when they were younger and about their divorce. I won't say much more, but they're very, 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 very good. And an Armored Man, who are one of my favourite acts of all times, local bunch again, Celtic kind of songwriting, folky. Really, when I sit and listen to Armored Man, I feel like I'm sat in front of a fire, and they're just fantastic. And I love them both so much. They're fantastic people, as are their wives and family. So it'll be a genuine pleasure to have them along too. And then Jack Walsh is then going to be main support, who's another artist that I manage, who I absolutely adore, who was the reason that I turned, when I first started Sad Buds with my friend Dan Warburton, it was a Sad Buds night where we'd play once a month on a Tuesday. And then I saw... We were doing Merry Sadness, the festival that I run for free in Colchester to raise money for local charities. But then when I saw Jack Walsh play his song Kintsugi at the Foresters about a year and a half ago, I turned around to Dan Warburton and I said, Dan, I think we need to turn Sad Buds Records into something more because I want people like that to be known by everyone. And now I'll run it with my friend Jake Cheek. But so don't come for the headline acts. They're rubbish. That Fraser Morgan is a waste of your time. He's got a stupid haircut and rubbish tattoos. But the main supports and all the supports they're incredible. And it's just, the talent that's going to be on that stage is going to be mind-blowing. And, like, don't even bother coming for me. Come for them because they will blow you away. And you will leave just feeling like a brand new person, I promise you.
Great stuff there, having the opportunity to catch up with Fraser, and do try and pop along. So that's Saturday the 8th of June, Fraser Morgan's 1,000th gig. How amazing is that? Now, what have we got coming up? We've got Mick's Picks coming up. So, we've got another Mick Fest coming up. This must be Mick Fest number 3. So, and that is on Saturday the 6th of July. So, Mick, tell us all about it. Mick's Picks are like a celestial flying teapot ride around a patchouli-scented galaxy guaranteed to bring wonder and open the doors of perception.
Well, Mick's Picks, it's been a while. And this time I'm going to indulge myself because some of you may be aware, but the Art Centre was stupid enough to give me my very own festival, Mick Fest. This year it's Mick Fest 3. Saturday 6th of July, starts at 1, well, doors open at 1, first act is on at 1:30, and it's all finished by about 11 o'clock, and it's a mere £15, and you get 12 acts for your money. How about that? So Ooh, name names. Trilogy. They're the headliners. They're Prog. There's three of them. Trilogy kind of gives it away. Missile, some of you may know. If you don't, well, £15. It's worth spending it for them alone, I would think. And Zytha, they are, I don't know what Zytha call themselves. I guess kind of post-metal stuff. I don't know. Dong Kong, couple of people doing nasty electronics, so that's good. Experimental Sonic Machines, that's one guy who makes all his instruments. Yep, come along for him too. Well, come along for all of it. Valhallans, well, that's my band, so yeah, need to be there for that. Bad of Doom, I'll just say that, even though there's an umlaut over the one of the U's. Guitar. Leech Book, Witch Folk, Beard Effects. The Anti-Ed Sheeran, perhaps. One man, a guitar and two effects boards. Cake Stupid, singer-songwriter duo. And then we have special guest superstars, Pete Kennedy, doing some performance art in the guise of Flying Saucer Eyes and Katsuo Ono 2. And there's also Nikki Cook, who's going to be doing some poetry. That's it, really. Come along, it'll be worth it.
And thank you for joining us here on the Colchester Arts Centre Never Knowingly Understood podcast, available on all the favoured podcast platforms, available on the Colchester Arts Centre website, where you can also book all of your tickets for forthcoming events. And we will see you again shortly.